In Nehemiah chapter 5, as we studied on Sunday, Nehemiah had some problems to deal with. That's not anything new. He had a lot of problems to deal with. But the problems to this point had been on the outside, and this time the problems were on the inside. And there were some issues among those Jews working on the wall that had to be dealt with. They were not treating each other well. And because of the famine and because of needs, there were Jews that had to mortgage their fields and their property to other Jews who were actually charging them interest in the process of doing that, which was against the law. It was just against all good principles and everything else to be considered as well. When Nehemiah heard about that, his reaction was, number one, he was angry. And he had to take a little bit of time to think about it. And then he responded. And so as we talked about that Sunday, there was just several points that really stood out. It was the sin of those who were acting in a way they should not that had to be addressed. It was the fact that it made Nehemiah angry, but he used that anger to even respond in a way that was right. He stopped and he thought about it before he responded. And we talked about it. We made the points that imagine if he didn't respond. Imagine if he just let sin to go on. And just think what would have happened if he did not deal immediately with the issue and the problem that was at hand. What would have happened? Well, I mean, everything that had been done so far was in jeopardy of coming to a stop. Well, something like that doesn't really come to a stop. Well, momentarily it comes for a stop. And then it goes backwards, doesn't it? I mean, the progress that had been made would have all been lost, and the enemies of God's people would have won. That's what they wanted, right? They wanted the work on the wall around Jerusalem to come to a stop, and that is exactly what would have happened. On our outline on page 16, the back side of your paper, we had started talking about making application. And as we've made application in these different lessons, we've talked a lot about different leadership principles, and application can be made in a lot of aspects in life, but we've tried to apply that most specifically to the church. And in specifically applications for that, we talked a little bit about, on the top of the page, Nehemiah made tough decisions. And the fact that there are uncomfortable decisions sometimes that just have to be dealt with, there are difficult decisions that have to be made, and Nehemiah has taught us something about doing just that. And a lot of times those are the situations that need to be dealt with immediately, and that's what Nehemiah was dealing with, a situation that had to be addressed right now. And to delay making a decision, to delay action, only makes whatever the issue or problem is even worse. And so we said, imagine for a moment how Nehemiah must have felt when he learned about this new problem and how that must have just been overwhelming for him. And yet, overwhelming or not, he dealt with it. And so we're at the point here, there's a question, and we said, do you think there are times a leader would just like to just give up and walk away? Now, I'm looking for some response. We're looking for some discussion here. You think there'd just be a time where a leader just says, I've had it? Yeah. Yeah, I see people, yeah. I mean, and I can only imagine how Nehemiah, he could just come to a point of saying, oh, you know, I've just had it with y'all. You know, I don't want to deal with this anymore. I wonder what Moses was thinking. You know, here we are 40 years in the desert, in the wilderness. 40 years he's put up with the murmuring of the children of Israel. They're without water. And God told him he would provide water, but God also told him how he was going to do it. Moses speak to the rock. Moses struck to the rock and he says, you know, you rebels, how long must we put up with you? You know, and Moses, it appeared as though Moses brought forth this water. You know, I'm not trying to make any kind of excuse for Moses here, because God made no excuse for Moses. But can't you imagine a little bit how Moses was maybe just at that point of saying, I've had it with you. I think that was the idea, you know, I've had it with you, you rebels. And we can understand how a leader can come to a point of just being so frustrated he just wants to wash his hands and walk away. We can see that. And so sometimes a leader can get pretty frustrated. Your thoughts?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
And Moses, like,
yeah, Moses was the one. Yeah, yeah.
So it's funny how after 40 years, the table...
It was turned the other way around. Sure. The frustration. The frustration. Nehemiah got angry. But he pondered about it. He thought about it. And then took action. On your outline here, just some thoughts, some good thoughts by Jeff Carr. He's a preacher on the West Coast, I know. And he kind of had a five-step process that's kind of identified here in the text. I thought this was pretty interesting, and I want us to make some comments about these. You know, I mean, the first step was just the anger. I mean, Nehemiah had a passion for righteousness, and what these were doing was wrong. And so there was anger that came. Then there was the self-taught, as Jeff says, you know, thinking through the problem. And then there was the reasoned, tactful contention for truth. You know, I mean, he said to them, what you're doing is wrong. You know it's wrong. And kind of held their feet to the fire. He put an end to the wrongdoing. This has got to stop. Immediately, he said, this has got to stop. And he held their feet to the fire. And I mean, we saw that as we studied through that on Sunday. Okay, now, let's make some application. Let's make some application to tough decisions that we might have to make in life. Or what about church leaders? You know, application for where church leaders sometimes have to make some difficult decisions. How might these principles we've talked about apply? What points can you make? What do you think? I mean, just look at points 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, anger, a passion for righteousness. How can we make application?
It, righteous indignation is not wrong. We just have to be careful how
we use that. That's right. There needs to be a reasoned, tactful contention for the truth. Contention is not in a negative connotation there. Sometimes we just have to contend for the truth. Doesn't get to the problem.
Get down to what's actually ailing you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think good leaders are able to
see through that.
See what the real problem is. Identify the real problem, yeah, is very important.
Yes. Very true. Good thoughts. What the second point? Self-talk. Thinking through the problem. Application. What would you say? Just simple answers. Self-talk.
You don't walk past the contract. You don't express it. You stop, think about it. What's wrong, what the problem is, and what's the best way to handle it?
Proverbs 14:29. A patient man has great understanding, but a quick-tempered man displays his folly. I like that. I mean, because and we all understand, we can relate to it, because we've seen it or because we've done it. And probably most of us have done it. You know, where something happens and there's a flash of anger and you do or say something that later you think, I shouldn't have done that. Or you do something that can be costly in relationships or financially or in other ways, where you know that once you thought about it for a little while, oh boy, I should have done it this way. And so the idea of self-talk. Think yourself through it. Third point, a reasoned, tactful contention for truth. How do we make application to that? A reasoned, tactful contention for truth.
Neil and I, gave an example of something he could have done when he made a bad decision. And he ended his thought there in verse 15 by saying, because of the fear of God, which his point was that no matter what he wanted to do, he put his respect to what God wanted to do first.
Mm-hmm.
And he used an example that most people say, well, that wouldn't have been that bad because of the situation. And so sometimes we have to, when we're trying to encourage someone who's weak or is caught in sin or whatever, instead of, as we talked about before, instead of just going at them and just trying to humiliate them, to consider ourselves, mm-hmm. kind of Nehemiah did there, to consider mm-hmm. himself and the things that he thought of maybe before he made that decision, but he feared God, put God first.
There is still that need for standing for what's right or contending for the truth. Remember how, you know, what Jude said with regard to this common salvation to those who is writing to, I find it necessary to write to you, exhorting you that you should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered for all the saints. That there has to be that willingness and desire to stand for what's right. But, I mean, we can't compromise what is truth. Truth is what has to be the basis of our stand.
Reminds me what Paul told Timothy in Timothy 4, verse 2. Preach the word, be ready in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with great patience
mm-hmm.
and instruction.
And yeah.
You need to do the hard things, but you need to do it in a way that is...
Do it the right way. Yeah, 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 do it the right way. Point number four. Put an end to wrongdoing. Some things just have to be stopped, don't they? I mean, we can make application in the home, we can make application in the work environment, we can make application in the church. Sometimes there are some things that just have to be stopped. And sometimes it takes some who are going to be willing to stand up and say, you know, we just can't do that anymore. Or even, you can't do that. You have to stop that because, look, it's wrong. This is sinful. Ephesians chapter 4. Look here for just a moment. Ephesians chapter 4. There was something here that just stood out in my mind in this passage. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25, beginning. Therefore, putting away lying, each one speak truth with his neighbor, for we all members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. Let him who stole no longer steal, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him in need. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to your hearers. Do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, evil speaking be put away from you with all malice, but be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God in Christ has forgiven you. It's kind of interesting that Paul's approach to this was on a number of things. You got to stop doing that. This is not who you are anymore. No, you can't. It's not just that you can't lie anymore, but now you have to speak good things. Not just that you should stop stealing, but you should labor so that you have something to give someone else. Isn't that interesting? I mean, all the way through, the analogy kind of runs, you know, that way. We see that point. And so, point number four, there's some things just have to be stopped because it's wrong. We have to quit doing that. That needs to be filled with what is right. Point five, hold their feet to the fire. What did he want those who were sinning to do? What did he want them to do? He wanted them to stop. What else did he want them to do?
Restore.
Yeah. Do what was right. See, there was the other side to that as well. And so in that section there, we're talking about Nehemiah made some tough decisions. I mean, addressing those issues, I mean, when they were having to deal with those who were their enemies, man, they were all hand in hand on that, weren't they? They were all on the same side. But now it was Nehemiah standing against some of his own. And you know what? That is never easy to do. That's never easy to do. But he did that. And I think that's something that really stands out with Nehemiah.
He also handled it properly. Instead, he did a lot of that. You know, he handled it properly instead of taking out, he didn't want the reproach to be brought on the Lord's people. So yeah. Instead of airing all the dirty laundry for all the rest of Canaan City.
Mm-hmm. They took care of it there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was private in that it was among them. You know, it wasn't the issue of all who were in Canaan, so to speak. You know, it was their issue. It was a public issue, but it was dealt with there. And there's something to be said about that. Sometimes churches go through some problems. And before you know it, this church and this church and this church and this church know all about it. How does that happen? Yeah. Someone's talking where they ought not be. You know, there's just multiple layers of lessons learned here. All right, next point. Nehemiah demonstrated self-control. I know we've talked about this already as we've kind of gone through the story here. But again, we're trying to make some applications with regard to leadership, whether it's personal, home, work, church, for sure. Wisdom, insight, tact, and diplomacy are critical when dealing with problems, but even more so when facing internal strife. You know, it seems as though there's just not issues that's greater or that can be more destructive than internal kind of issues. And that's what he was having to face here. Do leaders get mad? Yeah, we've talked about that. Nehemiah got mad. And as we just read from Ephesians chapter 4, sin is not being angry, but our attitude and motivation sometimes becomes what makes something sin. Well, who should anger be directed at? How would you answer that? How would you make application to that in view of this lesson here? What should anger be aimed at?
The sin.
That's right. Yeah, going to the source here of what is the problem, okay? Deal with the issue. Aim at the sin. Nehemiah's anger was directed at the selfishness, the greed, the insensitivity of these who are charging this interest against their brethren. And not to mention the fact that it was against the law that God had given them as well. You know, is it wrong to get mad? We've talked about that some already. It's you know, be angry and sin not. But we have to be careful about being angry. It's almost, I've heard some almost use this passage, be angry and sin not, as an excuse to get angry. I don't think that's the idea. Though there's some things that indeed at times we should be angry about. Things that are wrong, things that are unjust, things that are unscriptural. Some things we should be angry about. But attitude means just a whole lot. What about Proverbs chapter 15? I love the way the Proverbs deals with some of these issues, sometimes practical issues. Proverbs chapter 1. I'm sorry, Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 1. Straighten me out, Les. I saw Les looking at him. I knew I messed up something. Proverbs 15, verse 1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. You know, sometimes it's not what we say. It's how we say it. You know, I don't know that we know the entirety of all that Nehemiah said. What's recorded to us helps us to understand what happened. But we can also learn something about the way it was said. You know, makes a real difference. Emotions are something that is so hard to control. And if we can't control our own emotions, how can we become upset when somebody else kind of explodes because they can't control their own emotions? It becomes a very difficult balancing act. Proverbs 15 and verse 18. A hot-tempered man stirs up dissension, but a patient man calms a quarrel. Have you seen that? I mean, there has to be someone who can step in and just calm the situation. Tell you a little quick story, or just application perhaps. You know, in the fire service, you know, for many years, when you get called to an emergency, you know, situation, an incident, and you pull up on scene, you're the first one there, people actually expect that when you get there, you can do something to help them. That's why you call. That's what 911 is all about. Sometimes when you get there, you are not the person that can actually help the situation. And people are upset. They're scared. Emotions are high. Sometimes people are mad. Sometimes you pull up on an accident scene and law enforcement's not there yet, and people can do some pretty weird things. It can be like, I'll just wait in the truck until we see blue lights coming. You know, no, you don't do that. You have to get out and do something. I learned a long time ago that how you say things and the tone of your voice makes all the difference in the world of a situation that escalates or de-escalates. There's something to that. And it works in the home. It works in the workplace. It works in the church. And it works because God said so. I mean, this is a biblical principle is all it is. You know, and I've said this in some other times before, I guess, or at least in some classes, I can't remember. Some of the most amazing books that you can buy off the bookshelf down here at Barnes & Noble, self-help books or books that help you in a work relationship or home relationship, that people just walk away saying, this is an incredible book. Man, you should read these principles by Covey. It's great, you know, and it'll help you in all your relationships and life. And every principle that Stephen Covey makes, he has some great books. Every principle he makes is a biblical principle. If it's a good one, it's a biblical principle. However you apply those biblical principles in relationships, if it comes from Scripture, is right, and it will work because God made it that way. And that's what we're learning from Nehemiah. The last point here on this page, Nehemiah's unquestionable integrity. And this is just a point that just stands out to me. Nehemiah's unquestionable integrity. Let's go back to Nehemiah chapter 6. And let's read again the last part of the chapter here. We begin here at chapter 5. Chapter 5. I'm working on chapter 6. We're on chapter 5, verse 14. And after I looked things over. Nope, I'm on the wrong page. That's not right. Chapter 5, verse 14. Moreover, from the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, until his 32nd year, 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the food allotted to the governor. But the earlier governor, those preceding me, placed a heavy burden on the people and took 40 shekels of silver from them in addition to food and wine. Their assistants also lorded it over to the people. But out of reverence for God, I did not act like that. Instead, I devoted myself to the work on this wall. All my men were assembled there for the work. We did not acquire any land. Furthermore, 150 Jews and officials ate at my table, as well as those who came to us from the surrounding nations. Each day, one ox, six choice sheep, some poultry were prepared for me, and every 10 days an abundant supply of wine of all kinds. In spite of all this, I never demanded the food allotted to the governor, because the demands were heavy on these people. Remember me with favor, O God, for all I have done for these people. All right. What's this about? Our point is Nehemiah's unquestionable integrity. What's the point? What's the application here, that applications that need to be made? What do we say? Unselfish?
Never took advantage of the thing.
Didn't take advantage of the situation? Mm-hmm. Hmm? He was honest, yeah. Yeah.
He didn't take things that were right there and his to take, but he didn't take it. Just
because he could do it.
The Apostle Paul at times didn't take, you know, support from churches.
Mm-hmm.
Because he died.
Had the right, would even argue for the right, but didn't do it because it wouldn't have been prudent, I'd say.
Yeah, I was going to say, in line with the same thing earlier, he sacrificed his right.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think? What do you think that this did as far as his relationship to those that he was working with? What did it do? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen already, kind of as we come to the story to this point. I mean, Nehemiah was there, the work that's been done on the wall. I mean, he was out there with him. You know, he was among the people. He was with the people. And we've learned, too, that there was a famine. There are some who have even had to sell get a mortgage against their fields and stuff like that so they can buy grain. You know, and while Nehemiah would have the right to be fed well, he was holding back on all of that. Isn't that, that's just impressive to me. You know, it's... Being a leader is not necessarily putting oneself up on a pedestal or even allowing others to put you up on a pedestal above them. Isn't that interesting? And think of the influence that he has demonstrated. I mean, in this situation, this internal situation that could have just absolutely exploded. You know, when he stood up before them and said, "What you're doing is wrong, and you need to stop this immediately. And you need to restore to these others what you've taken from them." And they did it. Don't we think that has something to do with his manner of life and how he's dealt with just some of these issues right here? The fact that he's not parading himself high above everyone else. Isn't that impressive? Tell you what, now let's make some church applications to just that right there, these points. What applications can we make with some things that Les has said? What applications can we make when we look at Nehemiah, his character, his integrity? What applications come out of this? We see the kind of character that can have the greatest impact and influence. We see that. What else? Where do we go with this?
The kinds of things that Les said about Lord Washington and the respect that the people had for him, you could parallel that to someone who, yes, maybe they do aspire to be. But they're not, you know, pushing themselves on the congregation, but because they've been down in the trenches. respect for him, and would be willing to have him be an elder, as opposed to somebody who just wants to push their way in and say, "Hey, I want to be an elder."
It's interesting, you know, there's a younger preacher I've been talking with some. He's had some questions about doing some study on the eldership, because he needs to do some teaching on that. We've been kind of studying through some of those things, and we were talking on the phone yesterday. And he says, how do you identify a man that's qualified to serve as an elder? And I said, well, for one thing, I said, when you look among you and there's a man or men that are in many ways already doing, you know, and have the characteristics of a man who would serve as an elder, that's your candidates. That's what the nation saw in George Washington. They saw the qualities and the characteristics of one who would make a good leader, you know, in that way, though he wasn't necessarily trying to promote himself. When the call came, he was willing to step up and do that. You know, interesting parallels right there. All right, I want to talk some more here about just the integrity of the character and with regard to the Lord's church, making application, you know, with this. What are some other points we can make?
Being apt to serve, that would be a top priority to somebody like that. And, you know, Jesus was God in the flesh, and he had all the right for everybody to bow down before him, but he was a servant.
And that was exactly what he tried to teach his apostles as well. I mean, the lessons that he gave to his apostles primarily, to others as well, about servitude, John chapter 13, washing the feet. You know, he was trying to teach them character. He was trying to teach them, you know, what kind of attitude that they needed to have. The Apostle Paul wasn't there on that occasion. In fact, he wasn't an apostle yet, was he, at that point? But, you know, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 10, when the apostle was writing to a church at Thessalonica, he said, "You are witnesses in God also how devoutly, justly, and blamelessly we behaved ourselves among you who believe." Stepped in the middle of the story there, but and there's more to that, of course. The point that he was trying to make is that when we were there, we were teaching, we spent time with you, you came to know who we are, and he says, now you can make some judgment about who we are because of how we behaved ourselves when we were among you. And he called out the point, you know, that we were devout, we were just, we were blameless. You know, thus far in our story with Nehemiah, while there's been a lot of issues to deal with, he's been, you know, forefront in the story all the way through. You know, I'd have a hard time throwing any blame toward Nehemiah, wouldn't you? I mean, his character is above reproach. I used to hear people say that sometime. You know, so-and-so is just above reproach. Now, I don't know, maybe that phrase is kind of going out of favor these days, is kind of as our vernacular changes some. Or maybe there's just not that many people who are above reproach anymore. I don't know. Maybe that's what the issue was. I had this job when I was about 18 years old. I was a little younger than that. Working in this warehouse doing maintenance. I worked there for a number of months till I got another job. Anyway, I asked the manager if he would, you know, write me a letter of recommendation. He did. He was very kind. He was very gracious. And he put in this letter, you know, he said something about my character was above reproach. I didn't know what he meant. And I had to think about it. I thought, I think this is good, but I wasn't sure. Isn't that funny? You know, but it's just, that was a long, long, long time ago. But, I mean, we just don't hear that vernacular used so much. When we stop and we think about it now, we think about the power of that. And how Paul said, when we were among you, we were blameless. And as somebody mentioned tonight, even for one who would serve as an elder, their reputation has to be such that they would stand blameless. You know, so some powerful thoughts there. The other ideas or thoughts we need to mention?
Well, one thing, he led by example.
You did, yes, true.
He didn't ask any more out of them than the Lord Jesus did.
That's right, that's right. Which that's interesting, too.
He stood up.
Yeah, that's right. That's good. Charles? Okay, all right. Harry?
response that came back, there was a lot of respect that they had for him.
Well, as we spoke a few lessons back about, you know, one of the purposes of leading is to create new leaders. And one of the things is once you have a calling, if you're going through hardship, who are learning from you are also, if you're coping with hardship, then they're following you and your, you know, your ability to cope with it. So they do the same thing that they do to learn how to cope with it. It's sort of the same thing as, you know, you understand their pain, you know, but also they're understanding that you're able to deal with it. So it's,
and there's a respect level that's built there with that.
Yeah, good thoughts. Let's look at the next lesson. Oh, go ahead, Gene.
When you close out that chapter, after the
description... There's another point you need to make there.
After this description of all that he has done and all the people he has fed and all the animals that, you know, every day is going through a lot of food. He is, you know, the greatest host ever, I think. And then he closes it out by saying, God, remember me for all these things that I have done. And my first reading of that was, wow, that's a little self-righteous. But no, I see, you know, as I look at it, he's laying up his treasures in heaven. Mm-hmm. And he wants to be recognized by God, not by man.
Mm-hmm. And what he has done in life has put him in that place, in that position.
Good thoughts. Our time here is just almost gone. We're not really going to get into the next lesson so much, but let's just make a couple of comments. We've only got about 2 minutes left. And, you know, make sure you have lesson 9, which covers all of chapter 6. And it's the enemies again that have come back. The external enemies that have to be dealt with in a very forthright kind of way. And they come back with a new tactic, you know, where they are trying to undermine the truth, really is what they're trying to do. And once again, Nehemiah could make some really wise or really poor decisions that would absolutely change the outcome of what has been done and what could still be done in finishing this wall. And I think there's some powerful, powerful points that will come out of this that will be helpful for us. And I think we can make some other good applications again, too.
We need to think about the reason why the external enemies come back. They come back because the internal problems have been resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Satan's not going to quit.
That's right. That's right. Isn't it? It's amazing. It's like, you know, sometimes a church says, well, we are at peace. You know, you talk to a church, how things go, we are at peace. Well, for how long? Or sometimes my response has been, you better look out. I mean, it's when things are going the easiest or the smoothest is when Satan's just ramping up. It's like he's just getting ready. And it seems like Nehemiah doesn't get a break. There's the outside problems and this one. There's inside problems. Got that resolved. Now the outside problems. They're going to make another run at trying to make an attack. And that's what chapter 6 is about. And it's a real interesting story. Lord willing, that's where we're going Sunday morning. So read through chapter 6. Work on these. You know, try to read some of these questions over. Just get some thoughts here. Jot yourself some notes down so we'll have some comments to make on Sunday. Amen.
Because if you're united, if you got your internal house in order,
you can deal with what comes to you.
External stuff.
You can deal with what comes to you from the outside. That's exactly right. All right. Good comments tonight. Appreciate it.